Peace. Shalom. Salam.
Shanti.
Worldwide. I say peace when I jump on a beat. I say peace when I walk in the street.
When I walk in the street.
I say peace when the sun's in the east.
I say peace
when I need a release.
When I need a release.
I say peace when I'm facing the beat.
I say peace
when I'm taking you deep.
When I'm taking you deep.
I say peace cause I know I'm complete.
I say peace.
I say peace.
P is for the people, E is for the essence, A is for the answers that we get from God's questions, C is for the conscious, E is for the earth, so everybody gotta stand up and find a worth.
Oh, I woke up this morning, Ramon, and I had that irresistible urge. You know, I'm getting that urge very, quite often to wash my potato. And, you know, then I got up and I went to work, and all the way to work I was trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this world. And, you know, with guests that we have on, like we have on tonight, you know, the thought crossed my mind, it's not necessarily what all's going on in this world, but what all's going on in those other worlds, too. So, you know, maybe we'll add another piece to the puzzle and get a little bit clearer picture tonight of what's really going on here. So, anyways, welcome to the Hundreds Monkey with Tom and Ramon, and... oh man, so much is going on. I don't even want to get into what's going on in the world, but a lot of change is happening. Let's put it that way. And change is good because the way we have been has not been sustainable. So,
well. Just want to mention that we still have those little monkeys. Send us the email if you're interested. They're the 8 gig, and we have the entire year of 2011 and from November to 2010. So you get that. You get 5 video interviews that we have, and also the Book of Aquarius will pop in there as well.
Ramon, when's your book going to be coming out?
Oh, my book should be out February. It's called Scratching the Cosmic Conscious.
This is February.
Oh, the ending of February.
Oh, okay.
I'm time traveling a little bit.
Yeah, okay, that happens, that little slip.
And, yeah, you can find us on Facebook, Podbean, Twitter, YouTube, and Vimeo. What were you going to say, Tom?
I was going to say the bumper music you guys are listening to is another Luminary song. This one is Peace. And, yeah, these guys are good. Check out their stuff at, the luminariesmusic.com and facebook.com/luminariesmusic.
There's a link there on the website.
Yeah.
We will be trying to bring them on either in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah,
see what happens. I think
that would be an interesting interview. So,
yeah.
So tonight, who have we got, Ramon?
Tonight, I was gonna mention something about quick news, really quickly. The former Monsanto lawyer, now FDA czar, leads a raid on the Amish organic products. So read about that. If it makes you upset, then do something about it. Be the change you want to see in the world. And that's, without further ado, Mark Bergman, founder of the archetypal dream work in 1973, and has been evolving this work as a student of his own dreams and those of his clients in almost 40 years. With his partner, Krista Lancaster, he founded North of Eden, an organization dedicated to archetypal dream work. Mark and Krista are master teachers at the Center of Archetypal Dreamwork and have presented this work in the workshops, retreats, and talks throughout the United States and in Canada, Bermuda, and Europe, as well as in radio and television interviews. Among other books on archetypal dreamwork, Mark is the author of the Deep Well tape series, Dreaming Metaphysical. a book of short, accessible teachings related to the stages of archetypal dream work. And he and Krista are also the authors of Flesh of the Bone, Dream Descents Through the Past Life Trauma. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ramon and Tom. Thank you for having us.
Oh, yeah. So, we're both kind of excited about this because I think we mentioned off the air that Ramon and I do have a tendency to rehash our dreams on the air, and some of them have been pretty interesting, and maybe later on we'll get into some of those and get some expert appraisal on them. But first off, would you guys start off with kind of explaining what the archetypal dream work is all about?
You can't pronounce it either, huh?
Archetypal, it works. Well, basically, everybody dreams. And the purpose of dreams or the intention of dreams is not what it's been postulated to be by most dreaming communities or dreaming ways of looking at. We're often thinking, well, you know, the dream is going to tell us something to guide us or premonitions of things to happen. Then we look at our dreams and they're not guiding us. And we're always looking for that kind of guidance. Well, you know, this is, of course, if anybody's read Carl Jung's The Red Book, which was just released a couple of years ago, was secretly written in the beginning of his career for 16 years, and when he died, it never was released. And now it's come out, and it was wonderful for us because it's like, okay, that's what we've been doing. And so we tie our wagon to Carl Jung's Red Book, which is really about his journey. But most of the Red Book is really not so much about his journey. It's about confronting the ego. And in the stages of this work, one of the most difficult things to talk about is stage one, where rather than guiding us or supporting us or loving us, which can sometimes happen, but mostly what people find, the truth of the intention of the dream is to confront us with our stuff. In other words, before we can even begin the process of finding the soul, which is the intention of the dream, to discover the soul that's been lost, we first have to find the lies that keep us from taking that journey. And that has been, if you get past that part of it, then the dreams open up to much deeper miracles of what's possible within the self. But we tend to want to hold on to who we think we are, and that's one of the first things that dreams challenge us with. And Krista, you want to add your understanding to this?
Well, I think you just gave a lot of information. I wonder how that's landed with you guys.
Well, it's just, I mean, I actually understand that quite well, and, you know, the whole aspect of it, the dreams being able to, you know, guide you in your daily life, you know, I have personally seen and had, you know, some, you know, premonition-type dreams that actually manifest in the world metaphorically, but I have actually had that happen in my life. So is there a combination of things happening here, too?
It's hard to tell. I mean, yes, people who do the dream work do sometimes find that, oh, you know, this, I had a dream about this, and then it really happened. And for the reality that lives within us to know certain details of our lives ahead of ourselves
is this, let's say, yes, that can happen, but that is the smallest part of what the dream process is all about. It's really about the first thing to understand is that the soul and the ego are separate. So the ego self always wants to be in charge. You were talking earlier about the nature of the world. Well, you have billions and I don't know how many people who are disconnected from their souls running around living their lives, and you have what you have today in the world. Very few people are really with their souls, even though some of them believe that they are. All you have to do is look at your dreams, and very clearly you can see the gap and the journey to be taken. The process of finding the soul is difficult because it's not about the mind, you know, getting better at something. It's about the mind dying. What the pathology is about the mind dying, and that's if any of your listeners out there read the Red Book and would probably find it overwhelming. But that what Carl kept saying over and over is that to even go into the deeper shamanic work, you have to confront the part of you that thinks and knows in order to get to underneath where the real feelings, the real heart of a person can then be utilized to take the journey. So it's of course the ego mind wants to say, oh yes, we just had a premonition and this happened and isn't it like miraculous? And the real miraculous reality is who we really are potentially. It's who we could become. But we live in a comic world reality where we're kind of like looking for the little miracles. We want to find a miracle when really we're the miracle if we can only find a way to die to it. So the intention of the dream may accidentally touch onto things that occur in the world, but the intention is really about the inner quest. And we'd like to, in this time, to share, we have, it's just talk right now, but I know that Krista and Sue and Ellen and even myself, we'd like to give you specific examples of what we're talking about at some point, about their own experiences in their confrontation of themselves and how that has allowed them to move into much deeper places and experience things that would be otherwise impossible.
That'd be fantastic. You know, I found that through my own personal path and my spiritual growth, getting to that place where I look at the world and have been able to see things from, I guess the best way that I've been able to term it is with the eyes of a child, the innocent of the eye, you know, through the eyes of a child, and with no expectation and no judgment on what I'm going through, what I'm experiencing, what I'm witnessing. I've been able to, with that viewpoint from that place, I've been able to glean much more value out of my experiences than in any other state of mind that I've ever tried to consider things through.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, in dreams, when the child appears in dreams, it's always the soul. So, and what you're saying about that child or that experience, through dreams is actually you're brought to a place where that place becomes the doorway to everything else. So I think you're saying something that's part of this work. It's great.
Right. So you guys do some fantastic workshops there. And I did watch your DVD, and it was I was actually impressed the way you actually would take one of their dreams and you would actually work through it, work through that dream and actually play out the dream there. Do you find that doing that, I guess the acting out the dream, does it have a deeper impact on triggering or touching something subliminally that brings things out in people more?
Absolutely. When you bring people together in a small group, which we do, which is sort of the essence of our group work that you saw and witnessed on the DVD, amazing things happen. And it's as if by entering back into the dream in three dimensions and having different people play different roles, all the energies of the dreamer's unconscious come alive and there's space to feel in a really, in a sensual way or a visceral way what is really going on in the dream. Because we all have ideas about dreams and we all think about dreams and we can all sort of look up intellectual interpretations in dreams. But when you actually enter into the dream, it's actually a field of consciousness and so much happens there and can pop open in a way that that is, you know, inaccessible in a way to the mind. So we're just about to go to Big Sur, to Esalen, in early March, and we'll have a group of people there who will do this work for 5 days. And through that time of having the time to actually unfold the meaning of the dream through stepping into it, it becomes a felt experience, like literally a felt experience, a knowing in the body, which then the mind comes along after that, but it's really about following the feelings that are opened up by the dreams, which take us back to the child self that you spoke of.
Right. So do you guys work on each person's own personal dreams that they will recount to you?
Yes. Yes, when we do a retreat like the one we're doing at Esalen, people bring a cluster of dreams, of their own dreams, and each person, each dreamer has a time in the group when it's their time, and their dreams are center stage, and their process is center stage.
Very interesting.
It's also to be understood that the primary work goes on a one-to-one basis, usually through Skype or telephone, and because we have clients all over the world, so it's great we have the technology, as well as our classes and such. And so when people come to the retreats, most people have had some pretty good mileage in the therapy. So when they come in, they've been working with a therapist for a while. But we do welcome people that have never done any work to come into some of these groups that are somewhat advanced, and they quickly become comfortable, even though their work may be earlier stage work. But if the group is really deep, then the new person can often find themselves dropping much faster for themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's actually a new thing to do the group work. The therapy's been about 30 years old, and I think the group work has been, what would you say, 10 years?
Mm-hmm. 10 or 12. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I always felt like that was ridiculous to do group work with this work. It should be done in this hermetically sealed room and with no light and, you know, all that. And to bring it out into the world and put it on stage in front of an audience, which we also do, where people will present their work, live dreams we never even worked in front of an audience who have never even seen the work. We've done that too, and exposing it in that way, in its raw, naked way, with people working through their traumas that are part of the nature of descent to the soul, and all the things people go through, it's kind of alarming to, you know, but to bring the therapy out into the world where people can see it,
it's the most exciting. I thought this would never work, but I was wrong. And not only works at retreats, it works in when we get to do it in front of an audience, with people just not involved and watching it. And because dreams are a lived experience, once you, as like Krista said, once you take it out of the mind and bring it into the drama that has an intention for each dreamer, and which is to experience all the myriad aspects of their condition and begin the process of alchemy, which is inherent in dream process and in second stage dreaming, to see it happening right in front of you without any choreographing and people actually changing. Of course, the more advanced person that's been around, you know, that'll happen.
Right.
But in all cases, it's quite an amazing thing to see. And it almost feels like you shouldn't put it in the world like that. It almost feels like it's got to be hidden. But it's wonderful that it can be brought out and shared in this way. And it's kind of a contagious thing because it's so... we're so untrained or unwilling or not supposed to be vulnerable. We're not supposed to be naked in the revealing of our inner lives that we deny or don't know about. And to share it with others who are also going through it, it's makes for such a tremendous type of container that really goes beyond the one-on-one work that I've dedicated my life to.
Right.
Even though that's still important to do, the group process, and this is what's really exciting for me, as I can just digress, that when I was young, Fritz Perls was my hero, and kind of, you know, I was into psychology, and he was doing the Gestalt work, which we did, I did that along with the dream work, and then it evolved into group work. So coming back to Esalen, their 50th year anniversary, to bring this work for the first time to Esalen, for me is really exciting because it's kind of Fritz Perls in a way started it by bringing the therapy into a group process.
Right.
Of course, Carl did not do. And
I can see the definite benefit of the group because as soon as you started talking about that, I saw the. I saw somebody sitting on the edges, watching the process happening, and seeing themselves within that process, and being able to work through that themselves, or at least get themselves to a place where they're willing to work through it. So, you know, I definitely see the big benefit of having it in that group setting.
Yeah. With some of the all the years that you've been doing it, what are some of the things that you've seen that completely just knocked your socks off with the clients? For example, like breakthroughs that they might have made that were just amazing.
Well, it's hard to answer that because, of course, when you work with someone over a period of time, the changes are incremental. And people who were incapable of being in a relationship fall in love and are in relationship. People who didn't know what they were doing on the earth find, you know, their calling. And there's so many stories, really, that are incredible.
So I would say the most important thing is that you deepen as a person. So that you feel more. One of the things that everybody does, I'm sure you'll agree, is that everybody projects. I mean, that's how we relate. We don't really relate. We project everything that we feel or think onto everybody else. So if all of us or half of us have had trauma in past lives, and the book I recommend that we, I think it's a great book that we wrote because it's really relational. It's about our own selves as well. It's like a novel, flesh off the bone. But this idea that we have trauma from past lives, I mean, the tyranny in the history of human beings, of course, we weren't kings and princes. We were probably you know, like everybody else, had some pretty bad stories somewhere along the line. And those things carry from life to life. So here we are with all this unresolved stuff, and then we just project it onto people. If we had a terrible, tyrannical experience with an authority person, we come up in this life and we feel that, and we make it about our boss, or we make it about our husband, or we find somebody that will actually be that way. So the first thing by feeling your feelings, by going down deep and finding out, oh my God, you know, this happened to me, or I'm as angry as the person I'm angry at. I'm as angry as the person that's angry at me that I blame for being angry. When you realize that all the players in your outer life are really being played out inside, and you can't resolve it outside as well as you can resolve it inside, and you come to terms with that, you sit in a deeper place in yourself. I mean, not everybody's going to do the work for 10 years, but any work you do at all is going to bring you to a deeper place in your body, in your feelings, and then you can relate to the world without blaming the world or making the world bad because you haven't dealt with your own dark memories and your own dark reactions because dreams make you come to terms with it, and in that way you can resolve it inside your own gut. I mean, the real idea of a hermetically sealed place to do alchemy and all that, it's your own heart. It's your own heart that's right. The vessel. And to do that, we have to stop looking outside at all the terrible things going on and look inside at all the terrible things going on. And dreams make you do that. Yeah. Nobody can do that for another person, but dreams, you know, there's a child, you know, being cut in half. Well, that's in your dream. That's about you. It's not about, you know. So here's an example. So here's this terrible thing happening in your dream, and you're in your dream, and you're going, oh, gee, you know, this is terrible. And maybe some things are terrible in dreams and some things aren't, but the process of going deep in yourself, you simply become that you, like, help the person to see that, for example, this is one of the tools, that they're the child being cut in half, or that, or the happy child that you're not. You get to feel into that and then compare it to how you live your life. So the dreams teach us not by using more projection, well, this is that, and that's that, and it's all outside. Everything is in you, good, the bad, and the ugly. But it's not a question of looking at it. It's a question of feeling it. And most of our feelings, the bad stuff and the good stuff, if you will, we don't feel. Because when we react and project, we're not feeling who we are. So we can't take responsibility for change, even though we might want to. So I always like, you know, say things like a bull in a china shop, and Crystal always likes to run. I'll hand it over to you.
Well, I don't know. You're covering a lot of ground, which is great. But I was thinking about my 16-year-old son said the other day, he said, wow, you guys are really having, an impact on people, and maybe you'll change the world. And I know that seemed to be the real theme of your show is about changing and the 100th monkey. And I do think there's a tipping point where if enough people in the world did not project what was inside themselves but dealt with it and did not react from that projection, we would have, a more peaceful planet. So there's a collective thing that's happening amongst the dreamers that we know and the people that we work with around the world now, that it feels like there is a tipping point at which there's enough consciousness and a refusal to keep the whole chain of reaction going.
So if there's something
I would say about this work, it really challenges individuals to stop that sort of cycle of projection and reaction, which is sort of the basis of conflict, really. So if I own my own, you know, my own anger and look beneath it, and the dreams will do that and show me the way to a deeper loss, then I'm not putting that out in the world for the next person to then react to. So it's really the premise of archetypal dream work that, you know, you get to have all of your own experience and to begin to decipher what is a real feeling, what is my soul versus the learned and adapted and defended behavior that just keeps the lies going, really, of that there's always someone to blame. And the way that we've learned to work with the dreams is about clearing out that blame. So if there's no one to blame and there's only your own self to look at, and then you start to descend into that real self that knows, you know, extraordinary beauty and great love, you know, what an amazing world it would be.
Absolutely.
So would you say that the person will go through a kind of, Greg, you've been mentioning alchemy a lot, will go through a burning kind of, an internal kind of burning before they can come to the real issues?
Yes. Sometimes dreams will prepare a person. So there'll be this kind of working through wrong thinking and old patterns of behavior and barriers to the deeper feeling. You've said burning. I mean, yes. I mean, really, when you get, which we call second stage work, the burning, it's right on. I mean, it's what it is, and it can be sometimes, for some people, it always involves a kind of a death of self, the self that we thought was us, which is, as Krista was saying, was just a way of coping. So yeah, it is like that, and it's the part of the work that Carl tried to talk about, but nobody, you can't understand it because it's a felt experience. Alchemy is a felt experience where different strands of material from different dreams, like you might have, for example, a moment where you're in this traumatic state, and yet in another dream you have this moment where there's this incredible love, and or another moment where there's this fear, and then what alchemy does, the therapist brings those together in the same moment, and there's kind of this chemical reaction, or which we call chemical meaning emotional or felt reaction, that actually can have curative effects on the body when you hold things in certain places, as that's happened for me. But there is in that way a burning in that moment when you bring these things together, where suddenly you feel something new, suddenly that trauma suddenly changes to something else, maybe to joy. But the process of engaging these extremes, great loss with great joy, great feeling like no one's there for you, which in trauma nobody was, you know, and that's how it ended badly, with great faith and great experience of love. These opposites come together in an extraordinary healing way, and again, I agree with you that it is a kind of a burning, Krista.
So yeah, I think Sue has an example. I think it'd be great to bring in an actual dream. So
oh,
Sue,
this would be great.
Share. I think it becomes a little more real.
Hi, this is Sue.
Hi.
Well, you know, I had a dream about 6 months ago where I was with a man who is the animus, what we call the animus in our dreams. And he takes me actually off this planet to another planet. And while we're there, he takes out my heart, literally, and replaces it with literally a fire heart. That when he puts it in my chest, becomes like incredibly reactive and fills my whole body sort of with flame and fire. And then he brings me back to this planet and like starts to teach me how to live with this new flaming heart. And it was an incredible dream to be like sort of whisked out of my normal, what I thought of as normal way of being, to like experience this like flame in my body in a way that I had never felt before. It was a very incredibly sensual dream and it was terrifying in many ways, but it changed my work dramatically.
Like how? How did it change your work?
Well, before that, before that, I had done a lot of work around what I thought, I had done a couple years worth of work around what I thought was something that I experience as joy, this like great energy I had in myself. And my dreams actually showed me that this great energy was actually energy that was fueled by a lot of rage. I had a trauma from my childhood, and I also did some regressive work. So this place that I thought was like full of great joy was actually just a place of false joy. Mm-hmm. So to have the animus like take out what I thought was like my heart and replace it with this true fire, this true passion, was an incredible thing. And since then, I recently had a dream where I was a boy in a dream with my own, like stepping into my own kind of libido in a way that I've never felt before.
Have you found that the taking you off planet to another place is represented going into different areas of thought opened up the mind to different possibilities or unseen possibilities?
For me, it was just sort of my personal sort of experience of the dream. It was like he was taking me to his realm. It was like I sort of saw it as the archetypal realm. Like he had to take me out of my own way of thinking and feeling into his sort of reality. Mm. Part of what I needed healing from, part of the trauma that I had as a girl was that I was sexually abused by my oldest brother in a place, this brother that I adored. So I had this place of great violation, and it was a place I never thought I could ever actually get past. I always thought there would be this place in me that was never quite healable. But with this dream, it's like I got my passion back. There's a way that I, like he returned in my heart, and through that heart, like the flame that went, the fire that goes through my body now, my passion got returned to me.
So before the dream, did you have trouble, sorry to dive deep into your personal life, but did you have trouble with men before then?
Absolutely. I think that's a really good question. I did, I would get into relationships, and at some point, my beloved in the world would become, I would start projecting my brother onto him. If they got too close, because my violation came in a place of great intimacy, I was really close with my brother. So if a man got too close, I would just immediately I can't trust him. Sometimes it was unconscious, and I would just start hiding. I would start backing away. I would get really passive-aggressive. And really, I didn't really know how to be open and intimate. I was terrified that I was going to be violated again. Before I started this work, I actually didn't remember the trauma, and the dreams brought me back to it after a couple of years when I was ready, and took me through the process of healing. And part of that was to see how passive aggressive I had been with men, and how, I still work with it. I'm still, on a daily basis with my partner. I'm still like, sometimes I just have to say, look, right now you're my brother, and I just need a moment. And I know you're not my brother, but that's all I can see in this moment. And I just need a moment, or an hour or something, to like get back to myself and get back to my work. Before, you know, 2 years ago, I couldn't do that. 2 years ago, it was a whole different story. It was, like, really hard to step out of that project, out of the projection, and really hard to bring it back into myself. So, you know, this dream of, like, having my heart restored in a way, the heart that maybe I lost when the violation happened with my brother was, you know, it was an incredible dream that I'm still sort of receiving on many levels.
Mm. Very nice.
That's quite amazing. Because, like you were saying, some people just never really get past those traumas. What are, because now I'm interested to find out, what are some of the other examples where people have got over huge traumas, such as the one you had, Sue?
Well, I think, Krista, do you want to talk about, I mean, you know, sometimes the dreams you talk about, we call it regressive dreaming, and that's when a dream comes that it's a period, like it's architecture and clothing of a particular time. Generally speaking, a regressive dream is a dream that reflects a memory of a past life.
Right.
And typically in these regressive dreams, when you're really in the deep place of working trauma, like, you know that this is where suddenly it's revealed something that happened to you, that you carry with you in your whole life. And Krista?
Yeah, so I'm happy to share something about that with...
In our Flesh Off the Bone book.
Yep, we wrote a book about it. So I'd worked for many years through my own issues in this life, and yet I still had symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, which I really hadn't experienced anything violent or abusive in this life, really just sort of normal, you know, benign neglect and dysfunctional family stuff, but nothing that would warrant the kind of traumatic symptoms that I had, you know, waking up in the night, screaming, that kind of thing. And a couple of years ago, when Mark and I actually got together, romantically, after being colleagues for many years, I began to have dreams set in medieval times, and they related to torture and being burnt, actually burnt alive. And I didn't really know what this was all about, and until we sort of began to read about that era in France, and we went to explore and actually went to France and visited some of the sites where a group called the Cathars in the early 13th century were pursuing a sort of path of consciousness not dissimilar to what we're doing now. And as I traveled around the French countryside, I started to have even more graphic dreams of being burned alive in a kind of pyre that they call the palisade. And so you can imagine, you know, this is a pretty dramatic thing to be going through. And I had a dream where I was driving along and there was an explosion, and then I was walking through a war-torn landscape and everything had been devastated. And as I went through this rounds of trauma and healing, I would have to go into the terror that I felt in the dreams themselves of being burnt or being in a desolate landscape. And still, there was a place where the symptoms weren't shifting. And I had felt that I had been a spectator at a burning, and that there was a dream that I woke up with in the middle of one night where I couldn't breathe, and I felt like I was suffocating from smoke inhalation. And I woke up in a panic, and you know, Mark said to me, you know, I don't think you were watching. I think you were really burned. And in that moment,
the suffocation ended, and I could breathe, and I just felt the truth, you know, sort of in every fiber of my being, that indeed I had, you know, I had been actually in, I had died in the smoke and the fire. So that's a pretty dramatic story, and I'm giving you the short version, but I have had no symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder since that night, almost a year and a half ago, where I had the experience of actually feeling what it felt like to be burned alive.
So becoming aware of the past life trauma and consciously acknowledging it was the key to freeing you from the issues that you were having?
Yes, exactly. You know, I had no, there was nothing else that I could pin it on. And until I had these dreams, I didn't know, you know, why I had these symptoms, you know, which included screaming in the night in sheer terror. And it was by, when I was ready, I got those dreams. And when I had those dreams, I then had the image and the experience that I could enter into and re-feel the trauma, which is really, excuse me, the root of the trauma work that we do in archetypal dream work, is the dreams will actually take you back into the worst experience, and with love and support, which comes internally through other dreams, and support from the therapist and support from the group, you can actually really move through the deepest trauma and have complete healing. I mean, what Sue is talking about in her experience is, you know, the complete renovation or restoration of her heart, of her girl, innocent heart. Now, there are a lot of people who say out there that, you know, you can't really heal from trauma. And we have found working with, you know, dozens of people with very serious trauma in this life and past that, you know, complete healing and reconnection with the divine is possible.
Oh, I agree.
Part of the mystery that when you, it's actually, trauma is actually, I mean, not everybody has deep trauma, but those that do, trauma is actually a way to divine love, in a way the spiritual consciousness can be evolved through working through trauma. And the reason why that is, and this takes time, because first you're given, the animus visits you in your dreams and supports you, and you start to open up. But then you go back, it threads back into the trauma and then back and forth until you get to this point where, in the moment of where you were, wherever that moment of abandonment for you was, or trauma, that's the moment that the archetype, this is how part of the alchemy of it, that's where the love is, comes to you. So it wasn't just, like Krista said, it was a long, short way to say it, but actually it was more to it that because of the work she had done, and she had already allowed or acknowledged this divine love, that when she was in the palisade and was burning, she also had the presence of the divine in a way that was not there when she died. And, you know, the point is, when most of us, when we die poorly or we die, you know, in a really bad way, we're not like Jesus on the cross or something. We're like, we're angry and we're
scared, or yeah.
We don't see there's a God, and we come into the next life really pissed off. And there's a lot of anger that has to be worked through as well. That's valid for any kind of violation. So all of this, you have to prepare for it, because there's such a strong opinion or will that hates, you kind of hate because of what happened to you, kind of, so much of your heart becomes, you just don't trust. So all this evolved to a point where, you know, as Ramon said, in this burning, you suddenly accept the love in the moment of the greatest trauma, which is the whole point of Flesh Off the Bone. Mm. It's the whole revelation of that. Wow, you know, the worst moment becomes the way to find the divine and the way to find my soul. What a concept. Now, I've been in this work for 40 years, and I just really came, and this really came out of the deepest work I've ever done, and others have come, only in the last couple of years. So we're learning as we go, and this is kind of an amazing thing to me.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of what you just said there is finding that divine in the worst trauma that you've ever experienced at that moment. You know, as soon as you said that, I see a parallel in what's going on in the world right now, as far as you know, people actually asking those questions about what's really going on, who am I, what am I, because of all the crap that's going on in the world, in the exterior world right now, all the trauma and distasteful things that are happening are actually creating a situation where people are really starting to consider, what's it all about? Who am I? What am I? So they're asking those questions. So I see that a parallel there in what you're doing and what I am seeing out in the world too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's unfortunate that it takes that kind of a, you know, just the crap that's going on to actually get people to do that kind of seeking. But,
well, that's a good way to put it, Tom, because my next question was going to be, as a human person, as a species, do we have to actually go through these traumas in order to reach that point? Because it almost seems like we do, but then, you know, we really don't have to, but we don't get it if we do, for at least from my experience.
Yeah, it's all mystery to me. People that I work with, they go through these dreams, and they're going through their traumas, and then out of that, they find themselves becoming like they want to do the work for others. You know, if you take it on a mass level, and dreams might work differently, and all we know is that the people doing this work now, many of them are going this route. It's possible that if this work spreads out and people are exploring this, that maybe it'll be different. So I would never say this path is the way. I would say right now, for the how many thousands of people that have done this work or are doing this work now, a lot of them are working on that edge. It could be that other people wouldn't go that route. I mean, there's so many ways that this thing's working that I have not a clue. I just know, like, for us, that's what we're doing. Maybe it wouldn't be that way for everybody.
Yeah.
But certainly the material, it isn't to say this is what dreams are going to do. It's more to say dreams take us wherever they want, and it can go many different ways, and we just should gladly just go, because it's the only thing we have that is beyond man's thought, or man and women's thought. You know what I mean? Like, we don't think our dreams. We don't create. It's something that's given to us outside of our own mind. It's the one thing that we don't create. It's created for us, and everybody has them.
Yeah.
For
okay.
a purpose that's for each person individually.
It is a gift, isn't it? So, Okay, well, we're nearing the top of the hour here, and before we jump over into the second hour, I want to give you guys an opportunity to give out your website and your books and where people can pick all this stuff up at.
Great. Like right now, Tom?
Yeah, well, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, most of the information about the work that we do is on our website. That's the best resource to find our books, our retreats coming up, our events, and that is www.northofeden.com. And we have lots of retreats coming up. We're going to be in Telluride, Colorado, February 24th to the 26th. We have a weekend retreat there.
Can I get you to get closer to the phone again, please? You're kind of quiet there.
Oh, maybe it's not on. Let me check.
Oh, here, I'll switch to you. Is that better?
That's much better.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll start again.
Okay.
I wanted to let you know that the best resource for information about the work we do is our website, and that is www.northofeden.com. It has books and also other interviews that we've done. And it has videos of some of the string work that we do and a list of all the events that are upcoming. And I just wanted to mention that we're going to be in Telluride, Colorado, February 24th through the 26th. We have a weekend retreat there. And we have several retreats at some centers. We have Esalen in Big Sur, California, March 4th through the 9th. And then we're going to be at Brighton Bush in Oregon, May 21st through the 25th, and at Kripalu Center, June 10th through the 15th. We also have lots of retreats at our own retreat center here in Vermont, which is called, this is where we get our name, it's literally North of Eden, Vermont, and that's where we get our name, North of Eden. It's a beautiful retreat center where we house people from all over, actually people come from all over the world to spend, now it's a 7-day retreat. And we have delicious food and beautiful accommodations way up on a mountaintop. In fact, in the winter retreat, we have to ride a snowcat to reach the top.
Oh, nice. Right.
So those are some of the highlights. We also, I wanted to mention that we do free webinars on the first Tuesday of the month. And this is free to anyone who just wants more information about what we do. So if you're interested, the information is on our website. And it's a very informal opportunity to ask questions and just get a general introduction. Another thing I wanted to mention is that you can submit a dream on our website. So if you have a dream that you'd like to just get an idea of how we work with dreams, you can submit it on our website and someone will get back to you about just give you an idea about how we might work with that.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, you picked that right up. I was gonna put that submit a dream in there if you didn't cover it. I think that's a fantastic idea. Fantastic.
Yeah, great. So I just wanted to mention too that we have we now have a college. It's the Center for Archetypal Dreamwork, and it's here in Vermont. But people sign up for classes all over the world. And again, thanks to the technology, you can tune in from anywhere. And we have a great class offering for anyone who's interested, if you're interested in becoming a therapist or if you're just interested in learning more about the work in general and how it may apply to you, there's a nice variety of classes that you can also access on our website.
Fantastic. Okay, well, guys, we're going to pop off of BBS here. Thanks for listening, everybody, and jump on over to www.the100thmonkeyradio.com and listen to hour two. This is actually.
If you're not a member, this is a good time to become a member.
There you go. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
The love you deny is the pain you carry.
We love you guys, and we'll see you in the member section.
Here we go, right into it.
Peace, shalom, salam,
shanti,
worldwide. I say peace when I jump on a beat. I say peace when I'm walking the street.
When I walk in the street,
I say peace when the sun's in the east.
I say peace
when I need a release.
When I need
people. E is for the essence. A is for the answers that we get from God's questions. C is for the conscious. E is for the earth. So everybody gotta stand up and find their worth. A world divided would often fall to disease and violence. Gotta get through the shame and the silence so we can be united. Only the righteous will overcome and become enlightened. Living your life, loving yourself, so love the mighty.
One love, one blood, and one heart. One people, one world.